This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Radio Game. I'm Tasha Fasil. To celebrate International Women's Day, we get into the hearts and minds of our favorite CEOs and female entrepreneurs to find out what it's like and what it takes to be the ultimate lady boss. For the final episode, we have Michelle Ho, who became an accidental entrepreneur back in 2009, when she struggled to find natural skincare products in the market for her newborn's sensitive skin. Michelle experimented her way to soaps and creams that work so well, she decided to set up the Kinder Soap Company. But since she never set out to be an entrepreneur, where and how did she learn what it took to be a good leader?
I never saw myself as owning my own business, even though my mom might have thought about it before. That's why she put me on a business degree. But I was quite happy to work for someone because I knew exactly what I needed to do. And at the same time, because I was, I don't know, by design or by accident, I managed to make my workflow quite efficient. So I had a little bit of spare time to do my own thing. By my own thing, I mean, like, if I had personal things to take care of and all, I could still manage it while I was still at the office. And I'm quite sure my bosses knew.
So you were a good employee?
I don't know. I hope so, because I hope I got the work done. But the fun part was, especially when I was head of customer service, that was really nice because we need to have a new or an interesting way of entertaining and also introducing the product. And my bosses, they gave a clear idea of the outcome, but it was up to us to actually fill in all the blanks in the middle and to figure out how to get there. So I thought that was a very nice thing to learn, being very clear about what you want out of your employees or what the outcome for that you're all striving for, but let them have freedom to actually figure out how to accomplish that. So that's one of the things that I learned. But this only came in hindsight because when I first started doing Kinder Soaps, I did everything myself, from making to marketing to packaging the orders to fixing things. It was only much, much later that my husband finally convinced me, he's like, can you please hire somebody part-time to maybe just package the orders for you? And even then was scary for me because I've always thought, I don't know how to be a boss.
Okay, so was that what stopped you from maybe getting the help that you needed? You were thinking about your abilities as a boss, or you were thinking, no, I can handle this, I can do this myself?
I was thinking I can handle this and do this by myself because I don't know how to be a boss. Okay. I don't want to inflict myself on other people, you know, because that's what I was worried about. I didn't know what exactly was required, or I was afraid that maybe they won't like me or I will give them unreasonable demands. And it was just not being confident about my ability to delegate, one, and also to be fair to people. That was what I was concerned about.
Were those the kind of issues that you grappled with when you were working? I mean, where do you think these worries came from?
Not entirely sure. Maybe it's just my personality, because I never think that I can do everything all at once right from the beginning, especially when it comes to involving other people. If it's just me, no problem, I'll just get it done. But maybe it was also a bit of fear or uncertainty that if I impose the same standards on other people, maybe I was afraid that I'd be disappointed. Or would it be fair for other people? Because, you know, there are certain things where I really demand a lot from myself.
So how long were you working on your own with Kinder Soaps before you brought someone else in?
1-2 years. And then finally, I reached out to people on my Facebook network and then found, well, there were some people who would actually just come over to our apartment, package the orders for a few hours, and they're off already.
Okay.
So we got used to that rhythm.
So it wasn't as bad as you had?
No. Actually, nothing ever really is, right?
Yeah.
Usually it's not as bad as you think.
Yeah, it's the fear really that gets to you, doesn't it?
Correct. And I'm seeing more and more of this fear issue being played out even now as well.
For example?
Okay, it's not entirely related to work, but now I've resumed training capoeira again. And I've recently started rock climbing as well.
Wow. Okay.
So a lot of things that I keep on thinking I cannot do is simply because I've stopped myself first because of fear of either injury, falling, or what.
Did you have that kind of fear stopping you from starting Kinder Soaps?
Not really, because Kinder Soaps didn't start off as a company, right? It was always more of like when Andrea was born, she had eczema. So I was trying to just make stuff for her. But there was no real friction to actually get it started, I suppose. Maybe after about a year, then I was thinking, oh, and with my husband's ideas and support, he would say, if you need to set up a website to sell the things, I can help you with that, because he's ace at that. But to hire people, that was my main
That's when you really felt it, that fear.
Yeah, because you're responsible for them. or rather the way that I look at it is that you are now looking after their welfare to an extent,
right.
You know, and it's great to be able to provide for them when times are good. And I can't guarantee that, you see. So that is the thing that was bugging me most of the while. Like, will I be able to make enough sales so that I can cover their wages? And if they don't cover their wages because of sales, how deep is that pocket that I can reach into so that I can, you know, provide for them? So that was the thing that I felt most burdened by. But it's, I'm not saying burden as a negative thing, but it's more like, this is a big responsibility. Can I fulfill it or
right.
not?
As a responsible business owner, these are the things that you have to think about.
That's right. And most of the time, I was working on this on my own. My husband is also a director at the company, but he's mainly like a silent partner. So he supports wherever it's needed, especially when it comes to documentation and things. But the reality is that I'm making the business decisions mostly on my own. So to not have someone there to bounce ideas off when I really needed it, that was a bit tough, especially when it came to hiring decisions. And we've made some mistakes.
Really?
Okay. The, yeah.
What sort of mistakes?
In the end, I think it boiled down to not managing them well, because inherently everyone has their own talent. But maybe some people need more hand-holding and guidance than others. And I'm not the type to actually do the hand-holding very much. I give you a task, you run with it. And there were some people who couldn't. Mm-hmm. And I think we could have actually turned it around. And if I had some training plans in place so that I can actually guide them on either better ways to approach tasks or self-management, self-motivation and things. Because when I let them go, I did feel that, oh, this is actually one lost resource in a way. I had the chance to actually try and fix it or to make it better, but I didn't, simply because I had other things to attend to at the time, and handholding wasn't one of them that I wanted to do at that point. If I had the chance to, I would like to be able to train people, even the ones who don't seem to be stellar performers. But that's the whole point of training, isn't it? It's like we all start from, you know, a lower level and we push ourselves higher. So my heart as a trainer, as somebody who can actually build other people up, maybe it's not quite developed yet.
In the last interview for the series, the last person I spoke to, Sasi, she was talking about how some work environments just call for certain type of people.
Yes.
Right? And and maybe the ones that, you know, like as you say, need that hand-holding, so to speak, are more suited to an environment that's more structured.
Correct.
Right. And I'm assuming working at Kinder Soaps, it's fairly flexible.
It is.
I mean, you're not working, like you're not clocking in at 9 and clocking out at 5 o'clock, are you?
No, we're not. We have broad job descriptions, but every so often we all like step into each other's roles, and we need that because it's a small company. Like you say, we don't operate 9 to 5, so when something crops up, right, somebody's got to step in and get it done. And thankfully, most of the people who are now with us, they know how to do that, and it's automatic. So we found that the people who adapt best are the ones who are willing to say, oh, okay, there's something new. I haven't done this before, but I can learn. Mm. The ones who fell away are the ones who said, this is my job scope. It's here. That's it. You know, I'm expected to come in at a certain time and leave at a certain time, and I will. Or worse still, they came in late and they left early.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so there's very different ethics there. But we do find that the ones who get the most out of working with us are the ones who are saying, like, okay, I know what I'm supposed to do, but if I need to do a bit extra, that's fine. Give it to me and I will see what I can do about it.
So these people, are these qualities about them obvious when you first hire them?
No, they're not. It's very hard to see. Or rather, maybe I didn't ask the right questions during hiring, and I'm very trusting. So if you say that you can do this, I'll take you at face value and then we'll see how it pans out. My one and only time where I hired full-time staff, that was quite an experience because I don't think I'll ever do it again. I mean, for good reasons, it's really shown us what we really want to offer for our employees, because we pay actually 15 ringgit an hour. And I expect people that when they come in, just do your work. If you find anything that will help me improve the business, please flag it up and we'll see how we can work together to actually push the company to do things better. And one of the things that I find very important personally also is the ability to step away from work, take off your work hat and do whatever it is that actually excites you as a person. So all our staff now are part-timers, and I think I would like to keep it that way because these are people who have been with us for a while. So we know that there is a certain level of trust and a commitment that is already invested in the company. One of the ladies, she's an avid traveler. So she'll tell me, okay, these are the dates that I'm not around on. can somebody cover for me? And then someone else will say, okay, yeah, I can come in, step in. And they come back from the travels or whatever activities they're doing, they're refreshed, they're energized. And I find that they are able to bring more to the company in direct ways.
Okay.
Yeah, because they are enriched as a whole, as a person.
Right.
So I like that.
So do you think it's possible to work in a corporate line, for example, and still have that kind of enriching life?
Maybe it is. I think so. But I'm only a small, you know, business owner, and I usually tend to run with what my gut feel feels right. Maybe not all companies in all industries can do this. But I was recently reading, I think it was Fortune magazine, they had the top 100 companies to work for. All of them seem to have a certain degree of allowing their employees to have that amount of freedom or enough time to actually pursue their own interests, and they support it. Or they might provide perks like free health insurance or daycare for staff who have children. I think these things are what really makes an employee more productive at the workplace. If they don't have to worry about, do I have enough time to get my personal stuff done? Do I have enough resources to be able to take care of myself and my family?
Michelle Ho, the founder of Kinder Soaps. In just a bit, we'll find out why she made the boss decision to turn down investments for her company. That and more when we come back. This is Radio Game, BFM 89.9.
You're still here. Good. Now, if you're listening to this podcast while on the treadmill, you're already off to a good start. If you're not, don't forget to join us at BFM's Health and Living Live 2016 on the 2nd of April. Find out how you can live a better, healthier life. Go on and register at bfm.my/health.
Good morning, this is Raise Your Game. I'm Tasha Fusil, and we are on the last episode of our Lady Boss series in conjunction with International Women's Day, which happened on the 8th of March. Our final guest, Michelle Ho, is an entrepreneur. She founded the Kinder Soap Company back in 2009. She has 4 kids, she does capoeira, and she recently took up rock climbing. So, Michelle, how do you manage to successfully run a business, spend time with your family, and also have time to pursue your personal interests? Have you figured out some sort of formula that works for you?
I think I purposely engineered it so that we don't grow exponentially. Because I did receive some proposals from a few parties about pumping in cash, and I turned them all down. At the time when I said no, I was wondering, like, yeah, is this the right decision? Because, you know, we do need the cash. Every company needs the cash. And I could see so much that we could do with it. But at the same time, it also opens up a whole lot of other considerations, because now you have somebody who's literally invested in the company and they expect certain things. So would I be able to fulfill their idea of how a company should transform after the cash injection? And all the while, I've actually tried to make Kinder Soaps an entity which cares for its people. And if there's money in and there's expected an exponential growth in sales, can I still offer that kind of time for our people to go out there and get their own things done? I think things would have been quite different. And I think, because I would have been the person to drive sales, ultimately. So I think my quality of life would have changed as well. And because the children are still small, I would much rather have a business that's growing at a pace that I can manage and at the same time still spend time with the kids. So it was an active decision to actually retain our company size, not grow too fast until we cannot manage. That time when the money was being offered on the table, I did not have somebody to help me with production. So I would have had to do sales and also do the production to catch up with it. So yeah, automatically it means less time for anything else.
So now that you've got your ace production person with you, and I noticed on Facebook, you call them your sunshines.
Yeah.
Which is lovely.
we've always had, I've always had the idea that we try and make people happy, whether it's the customers, our suppliers and all. So that's the reason behind the name.
If someone offered to put in money into the company today, would your decision be different? Would you have different considerations now?
Possibly, because now I think I would have a better idea of what to do with the money. This year, we made the decision to focus more of our funds on marketing. So that is broadening the sales base and our customer base. So yeah, if somebody were to offer something now, then I think I might have a better idea on what to do with it. But I will still need to learn a lot. And that fear of handling other people's money is still very much there. So I think we're in a better position to take on expansion now. But it will definitely be on a scale that is still manageable. Yeah, I don't want explosive growth. I've seen too many examples of things just explosive growth and the company exploded. I think there are not that many people who are actually born with the talent or who have actually learned the talent to manage such high growth.
So it's been 7 years since Kinder Soaps first started. How do you think you've grown as a person?
I think I don't freak out as easily now.
That's nice.
It's nice. The company has grown. I've had 4 kids, you know, so we're a bit more stable, a bit more calm now.
Are there moments in the business, though, where there are legitimate moments to freak out? Do you get a lot of those often?
No, because it's well managed. And I have to give credit to all our staff because they are the ones who are saying, oh, here's this hiccup. Never mind, we'll deal with it.
Right.
You know, so they in themselves also, they know how to handle these things. So as a knock-on effect, I also don't have to panic. But there have been times where shipments get delayed for ingredients and stuff. What has helped to manage the explosions is actually to manage communications and expectations all the way. So we are always very transparent with our clients. So look, if there's something that's got caught at customs, we tell them straight away. So this thing is happening. There's really nothing much that we can do.
Right.
We are liaising with them now. But please tell your own clients that there is this delay. Some people will try and say, oh, cover up, you know, say it's somebody else's fault. But to me, that's not the right way to do things. If there's something that's really our fault, like we've screwed up with the formulation with something, we just say that, I'm sorry, you know, we've got to do it again.
Okay.
And we will need this amount of time. But so far, I think it's been very, very minimal panic moments.
Just looking at your Facebook feed or even your website, there's a very clear sense that you really enjoy what you do.
Yeah. It's nice to know that it's coming across.
No, it does.
We do. And I hope that my staff also enjoy it as well, especially for production and the sales side. Because my background has always been customer service, head of customer service there. I remember when I first started Kinder Soaps, I remember the kick I used to get, like, oh, my site had one sale. And I was so happy. I was like, okay, I really did up that padded parcel really nicely. I'll write every parcel had a handwritten note saying thank you for your support. And I really, really meant it. So we did all we can to make it feel like it's a really personal one from one person to another, rather than one person through a huge distribution network and then ends up with you. And it's gone through like a lot in between.
Right.
It's always been a nice thing to communicate that this thing I really made with my own hands, and I hope that you'll enjoy it also. I hope that still comes across now that we've actually distributed the workload.
And then that comes back to you wanting to keep the company small so you can continue to have that kind of relationship with your customers.
Yeah. But there are other companies that have grown very large. Have you heard of this company called Saddleback Leather?
They're not the ones that do the Oxford, I don't think so. No.
No, probably not. No, but Saddleback Leather is actually a company in, if I'm not mistaken, it's Texas.
Okay.
They source all their cow hides and everything locally, and they have a fantastic customer support system. The owner himself is very eccentric, very funny, lovable type of guy. And if you go to saddlebackleather.com, I'm a fan, because I actually bought stuff from them and they're made to last. They have a guarantee that comes with every product. And their tagline is, they'll fight over it when you're dead.
Wow.
So it comes with a 100-year guarantee. Any fault in workmanship, they will fix it. And those things are really built to last. You buy once, you'll never have to buy a similar item again. But what I found interesting as a customer and learning about their customer service was how personable all their staff were. You would feel that you are dealing with somebody who's very genuine and somebody who is in line with the founder's vision of what good products are and how to deliver great customer service. So it's not impossible to retain that kind of language or the gestures to your customers if you grow.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what really made a difference was whether you train your staff to be aligned with your vision and also what is the kind of language they should use, what is the philosophy behind the thinking when they deal with customers. Because everyone has their own different way of speaking. I had several people attending to my order because there were some mix-ups and things. And all of them had their own different personalities and it shows through in their email, but they all work together towards achieving the same goal. So that's something very nice that I saw from my interaction with them. So it's possible to replicate good customer service. Just need to train it.
It's interesting that that's something that you really focus on. I mean, of course, you have a background in customer service, but I think that's what makes a business successful, or that's what makes a successful leader or boss, when it's when you have those kind of values. You know, when you focus on those kind of things as the driving force of a business.
Correct. We don't lose sight of the customers. A lot of the times when I talk to my husband, because he's working for a big company, some of the things that he tells me is like, oh, wow, the decisions that are being made by certain people really only serve themselves. I said, what happened to looking out for the customer? And he said, well, that's what it is in a big company sometimes. Okay. So hopefully we get to sidestep that. And our way of doing it for Ad Kinder Soul is just to stay small. And hopefully we still can reach out to a lot more customers even at our current size.
Moving forward, what do you think you want to learn to become an even better boss? What sort of skills do you think you would be curious to acquire?
I think talent management is one thing. It's a big word to me now, because there so much of a company hinges on what your employees can do, cannot do. And I would like to be able to find out how better to serve them, because they're doing so much for us. If I could help them build their own talents, it would be great if I could send them for training, whether it's for language proficiency or accounts or stuff, you know, or even knowing sales techniques and things. If they feel that it would help them, I would love to be able to send them for these courses. I also find myself deficient when it comes to like having things to offer them, because I'm actually one of the younger ones in the company. The two key people who are supporting our sales and admin things, right, they're much older than I am. And the reason why they run so well is that they have actually been trained in business administration. I feel like they actually have more to offer us as a whole rather than the other way around. So it'd be nice if I could actually find a way to help enrich them. But it's one of those things where you don't know really how to ask. Or I don't know how to ask. What more can I give you to make you happy working here? Because that really is what I would love to do.
It's a terrible way to shift. I mean, like, I can't segue my way into this at all.
No. It's okay. Just ask.
The theme for this year's International Women's Day is gender parity. In a corporation or even at a business, is gender parity something that ever crosses your mind?
No, never. But I suppose I have to understand that my world view right now is very narrow, I suppose, because the company itself is so small. And the people who happen to walk through our doors, in terms of staff, and the people who happen to stay, majority of them are women. I've never thought about, for this role, it must be a guy to do it, or it must be a girl, or what. It's just more like who is capable and who is willing to do the job at the time. But yeah, I don't really see it as an issue. Whoever just does the job best. One nice example of very equal footing when it comes to gender equality in getting the job done, I use a service called GoGet. And the go-getters who do the running around for me, whether it's to pick up parcels at Sepang, you know, from customs and all that, right? Guys, girls, it doesn't matter. And they're all very efficient in what they do. And they all have the same level of commitment to getting a job done. So I've been exposed to an environment where it seems that everyone is happy doing what they're doing. And I see a very balanced mix of women and men who do this.
Do you think in terms of running a business, there are nuanced differences between how a man would do it and how a woman would do it?
Maybe a man wouldn't have been so emotional when he gotten like the first
audit.
The first audit flunked, right? Because I remember that day, they were supposed to stay. The auditors were supposed to stay after lunch. I told them, I've got to fetch my kids. I'll come back after lunch and we'll continue. And they just said, oh no, we're done. You know, then 2 days later, the letter came and said, you have not passed your first audit. That afternoon, I knew already I didn't make it. So I was really in tears, like talking to my staff, like, oh no, I did such a crap job at doing it. And I think if a guy was there, then it's like, okay, audit flunked, never mind. So how do we move on? Do we move on or do we just cut losses here and just forget about this? This is just too much trouble. So maybe men would have been able to dichotomize this thing and just be more emotionally detached from what happens at the business. But for a woman, everything is more, you feel the links a lot more. Because I see my hubby also when he comes back home, he can just switch off completely and he's like doing his models and he's painting there, he's happy. Or maybe he just doesn't let on that he's thinking about work.
So for women it's more, or for you at least, it's more
interconnected. Everything, or rather I tend to see that everything will have a knock-on effect. I don't know whether I can speak the same for all other women, whether they see the business that way, or whether it's a smart thing to do, I don't know. But it's just this is just how we do it. Because all my bosses before were men. If there's any snag, they'll say, okay, this is the situation, how do we move on? Actually, interesting enough, the women who are also in high positions, they also have very similar styles. Like, okay, this is the problem, this is the issue, let's fix it. So when it came to the higher positions, you see that they have a very similar way of approaching obstacles and problems. But when it came to either my peers or the ones who are slightly lower ranking or didn't have a particular manager title or what, then you can see they get caught up.
Okay.
You get caught up with the little details and they get stuck. But I don't know whether that's more of a gender thing or just a general mindset.
Right.
They tend to see a lot more detail. If they're not careful, that actually becomes their own hindrance or they see it as a hindrance. Whereas actually, it may not be. It really is just perception, isn't it? Because everyone's facing the same issues and everyone is given, not to say the same resources to deal with it, but you have to deal with it anyway. So it's a matter of how you choose to respond to that. There were two very different approaches. You either let the details overwhelm you or you say, okay, that's it. What are the things that will serve me in terms of being able to overcome this particular obstacle?
Well, finally, if there were aspiring entrepreneurs out there listening to this who are maybe a little bit apprehensive or a bit nervous, but fearful maybe about going into business, what sort of advice would you have for them?
I would say give it a go. It's better to jump in than to regret not doing something. That horrible feeling of, I could have done this, but it was only right at that point of time. So I would say give it a shot. You don't have to start big. Things get scarier to consider when there's a whole lot of money on the table. And there's no shame in starting small. I personally feel that you have to be convinced that you are serving a real need, whether it's your community, your family. Because when you see that people are benefiting from whatever it is that you're doing, it could be baking cakes, it could be, I don't know, offering a babysitting service. Whatever you feel is actually helping other people and at the same time is nurturing yourself, I think you're on the right path already. Many people will have different definitions of what success is. I think it's important to actually think for yourself what your own definition of success is. Is it monetary? Is it fulfillment? Is it in the number of people that you help? It's all very subjective. And because of mass media now, there's so much noise as to what is touted as information that success has to be in this form. If you don't meet that metric, then you're a failure. I think it's important to actually start thinking for ourselves what these parameters should be for our own circumstances. Because not everyone is born with privilege. Not everyone also starts from ground zero, and there's no shame in actually being in a privileged position and trying to make the best use of it. But yeah, I think the most important thing is that you get started. And there will be naysayers. Personally, for myself, I haven't had that many. I've been very, very lucky. But if you do have naysayers, take into consideration what opinions they have. But at the end of the day, it's really your choice, what you do with your time, your energy. So if you feel that what they are saying is actually coming out of their own fear for themselves, then by all means, just go ahead with whatever it is that you want to do. But don't let fear stop you from doing something that you feel very strongly about. To give an example, there were a few times actually when I was driving and I was on the way somewhere to get something done. I live in an area of PJ where there are a lot of elderly folk. So I happened to see this one guy who was walking at the side. It was raining. He was with a cane and you can see he's hobbling, right? So I drove past. I looked at him. I did entertain the thought, should I help him? And I just drove on. And for the rest of the treat, I was really beating myself up inside. I was like, what were you thinking? You could have just stopped there, asked him, do you need a lift somewhere? So yeah, don't let things like that pass you by. So in the end, there was another instance where there was this old auntie waiting outside the porridge shop where I bought stuff from for the kids. And she started talking to me and saying that, I live actually very nearby here. So I said, okay, come in the car. I can drop you off. Another time, I was driving home from the hospital with my newborn. He was about maybe 6 months at the time. And then I offered a guy, he was wearing a mask and everything. Definitely the haze was really bad. So I offered him a lift to the bottom of the slope. And then later on, we had some family members say like, hey, are you sure you did the right thing? That's a safety issue. You picked up a stranger and just dropped them off there. But sometimes the right thing to do may not seem like the smartest thing to do. But if you feel compelled to do it and you see somebody's going to benefit from it, then I think it's worth doing anyway.
That was Michelle Ho, the founder of Kinder Soaps and the final guest on our Lady Boss series. To listen to the other women we've featured, head to www.bfm.my and look up Lady Boss. This has been Raise Your Game on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.